We often pray that Sunday would be a good day, a wonderful day, a day that is filled with spiritual blessings and benefits. We've read from Mark's Gospel, and there Mark describes some events that took place one Sabbath day in Capernaum and in the evening after the end of that Sabbath. We must remember that for the Jews, the day began at sunset and not at midnight, so that their Sabbath day for us would have started on a Friday evening and have gone through to a Saturday evening. But Mark recounts the events that took place, as we would describe it, one Saturday morning, one Saturday afternoon, and one Saturday evening after the sun had set. What a full day it was. What a wonderful day it was. What amazing things happened that day. And we might ask ourselves, why has Mark included them in his gospel? Well, Mark is giving us evidence to back up the words that he wrote right at the very beginning of his gospel. The beginning of the gospel, the beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Mark is putting down something there at the beginning of his gospel, saying, I'm telling you that I know that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And I'm going to give you some evidence to back up that statement. And throughout his gospel, he is telling us more and more about the nature of Jesus Christ. He's giving evidence providing evidence that gives substance to his claim. And as we look at one of the miracles that Jesus performed that day in Capernaum, we need to ask ourselves a couple of questions. Has what I've heard this morning reinforced? Has it backed up? Or has it contradicted that claim? And secondly, what will I do about it? What will I do about the things that I've heard about this day? Jesus had been to the synagogue. There he had taught and cast out a demon, an unclean spirit from a man. And then he leaves. He comes out with his disciples. Capernaum was the home of Simon and Andrew. It was the place where they had their fishing boats and from which they ran their business. We do not know if their father was alive or if they had other brothers who took over the business when they became the disciples of Jesus. But after the service that day, after the service was over and all had settled down, Jesus heads to Simon's home for a meal. A bit like a traditional British Sunday, really. You go home, well, I don't know how many of us go home, but there we go home to a nice roast beef dinner, roast potatoes, Yorkshire pudding, all the trimmings. It was a bit like that, but I don't think it was quite as special for them. But it was a special meal there on the Sabbath day to rejoice and to discuss the things that they had heard there in the synagogue. And they were expecting that. They were expecting to go through the entrance and smell the meal, to experience that lovely feeling you get when you know there's a meal that you'll soon be able to eat. They expected that time when they could sit down, talk and eat and discuss and have a rich fellowship and friendship together. Now, as they walked, I don't know what they chatted about. But I think they hardly said anything. Peter and Andrew, James and John probably didn't talk at all. They would still be trying to come to terms with the way that Jesus taught in the synagogue, the wonderful things he said that amazed, astounded everyone. And then that miracle, their minds are in a turmoil. They don't know what to say. But they know this one who was in the synagogue with them, that this one is going to be with them at the meal table. He taught with authority. He cast out with authority. There was a note in what he said and what he did that was markedly different from anyone else and everyone else. And they come to the home and they go through the door and something's wrong. They can feel it immediately. It's not right. Where is that pleasant smell of a meal being cooked? Where is that lovely aroma setting up the taste buds? It's missing. But why? Why? What has gone wrong? Now, Jesus is an honored guest. In that society, in that culture, at that time, that cultural expectation of hospitality is now for them a practical impossibility. Simon's wife's mother is ill. She's laid out with a fever. She's flat out in bed. What a shame. What shame this would bring upon that family, that they have a guest and they've got nothing for him. An honored guest and nothing is ready. But Peter's relative is not merely unwell. She's not a bit below par or out of sorts. She's not just poorly. She is gravely ill. A fever has taken hold of her. It's gripped her. It's laid her out totally, totally unable to do anything except lie there, alternately sweating and shivering and receiving, I would expect, the tender care of her loving daughter. But she can do nothing. The hostess is unavailable. And I can picture her there, lying in bed with her daughter, bathing her forehead with a damp cloth, trying to keep her cool, trying to reduce her mother's temperature when she's burning with the fever, or perhaps wrapping her with more blankets, covering her with more clothes when she's shivering. She's alternating that mother-in-law. She's alternating between burning and shivering with the fever. She may even be uttering things that, because of the fever, she's become delirious. I do not know. There were so many fevers there, and very little could be done about any of them. You had to hope. You had to hope that the body's natural defenses, the ones that God has given us, that they would be sufficient. And that they gradually would overcome the infection, the fever, the virus, the bacteria, whatever it was. And that you would recover. You would treat the symptoms. And you would hope that the body would deal with the cause. Of course, there were doctors then, and there would be many remedies that would be provided. But I think that most of them, just like today, there are many remedies that are tried, but they avail nothing. They do not do anything. They do not cure. They merely reduce the effect of the symptoms. Now, there are many fevers in this world. There are many around the world. We've heard recently of the cause, the problems with the Ebola virus, but most of us would be very familiar with the fever that's associated with the flu. We know what it's like. Well, I can only describe it from my point of view. I can only tell you of my experience, and some of you, I'm sure, would say, that's that man flu. It's not really there, it's just an illusion. It's only something that men dream up to get a bit more sympathy. But the symptoms usually develop. You know, you get a sneeze or two. Your eyes begin to water a little. You have a sniff. Your nose begins to run a bit and you need more hankies and so on. you get a bit of a, my head, I need some paracetamol. You get a headache. Some of your muscles and joints become a little stiff. But you're just out of sorts. You're not really unwell. But you get up in the morning. You get dressed. You get ready to go to work. And suddenly you feel the room should be static. It should be standing still. But it's going round a bit. You get a bit dizzy. You get unclear in your thoughts. And you get lightheaded. So you sit down for a few minutes thinking, that will make everything all right. But it isn't. It isn't. And the only clear thought that's drumming its way through your mind is, I can't go to work today. So you contact work reluctantly. You inform them you won't be ill. And you get undressed and get back into bed. And then it hits you. You get hotter and hotter and hotter. You start to sweat profusely. The pyjamas get drenched. The bedclothes get damp with all the sweat you are producing. And in the midst of it all, you fall asleep. And you wake up a few hours later feeling worse. More aches, more pains, more shivering. You feel shattered through, though you've done nothing at all except lie in bed. Your head is still going round. You try to think about things, but you can barely concentrate on anything. And your thoughts and any sentences that you try to utter are more disjointed than normal. And you stay in bed all that day, sweating and drinking and trying to eat a little. And you feel very, very, well, not really different at the end of the day than you did at the beginning. And you sleep all through the night. And you get up. You feel a little bit better when you do so. You go downstairs and you have a little bit of breakfast. And you have a cup of tea. And then you realise that was not a good move. It was not a wise thing to do. You were better off in bed. Waves of weariness just flood over you. And you're shaking. And you stagger upstairs and back into bed. You've taken painkillers. You've taken all the flu remedies that you can find on the shelves in Boots or Morrison's or whatever. And what effect do they have? Very, very little. That flu has got hold of you. You are exhausted after any sort of activity. You are hot and cold, sweating and shivering. But eventually the feverishness does disappear. Eventually you do no longer feel woozy and lightheaded. And you can get up because you are feeling better. And you don't immediately want to go back to bed. You don't immediately think you have to go back to bed. But still the slightest exertion, it just brings on tiredness and fatigue once more. Now that could last for weeks, but being brave men, we would go back into work very shortly afterwards and do our best with whatever energy we've got until we are on top form again. Do you think I've exaggerated the effects of flu? Do you think it's not that bad? It can't be. It's all in Stuart's head. It's his imagination. He wants Linda to look after him while he's just relaxing in bed. Recently, last year, there was a display in the Tower of London of more than 800,000 poppies to commemorate those who died from the Commonwealth in the First World War. Altogether, in the First World War, the figures are not clear. We do not know exactly how many people died, and there are many, many estimates made about it. But it's somewhere between 6 and 11 million people died in the First World War. In 1918 through to 1919, there was a flu epidemic. it affected 500 million people. And somewhere between 50 and 100 million people died from the flu. It's that serious. Or it was then. It is not. It is not a slight disease. It can have fatal consequences. And that's why there is such a stress put on the flu jab for those who have chronic long-term illnesses. The flu, influenza, can be fatal. That disease, that fever that Simon's wife's mother had, could well have been fatal. I would expect that they were unsure when they saw her on that bed whether she would recover or whether she would die. They did not know. And Jesus has come. With all the problems of that woman's illness, now Jesus has come and we have to provide hospitality. We have to do something for him. But it turns out, it's totally the other way round. It's not that they have to do something for him. He is going to do something for them. They tell him about the situation, perhaps to try and reduce the expectation of a good meal, and so we'll give you something, but it will have to take a bit of time. They tell him about the situation. They show him into the sick room to show the mother-in-law to him. And they ask him, can you help? Can you do something? They've seen him do miracles before. They've heard him explain wonderful things. And in their hearts, in their minds, there is that flicker of hope. He can do something perhaps for our mother-in-law, for this woman who is so ill. And simply out of compassion and out of response to their request, out of compassion for this woman and her daughter and Simon and Andrew, he stretches out her hand, out his hand, takes her hand, tells the fever to depart, and lifts her up. And to the utter amazement of everyone in that room, she's not only able to stand, but they look at her face. All the signs that there was a fever that had gripped her have disappeared. She's no longer looking so flushed. She's no longer looking feverish. Her complexion is normal. She's no longer shaky on her legs. She's standing upright, firmly, with life in her. She was no longer forced to lie down. Her legs are not giving way. She's no longer drained of strength. She's radiant with strength, radiant with health. Her face is positively glowing. She's bursting with energy in a moment. Because Jesus reached out, took her by the hand, and bade that fever to leave her. Christ has healed her totally, completely, instantly. And he has restored to her all that vigor that she had before she was gripped by this fever. Her strength is back. It is as if she had never been ill. Such is the immediacy of this recovery that she can then get on with preparing and serving a meal to them all. What a wonderful thing to happen that day. What a wonderful thing Jesus did for them. Now, it was not the first, nor was it the last miracle that day. It was not a one-off, a never-to-be-repeated event. Jesus is beginning his work of healing and making people whole. Now, Christ is that appointed healer. He is the one who is appointed to do away with every evil that sin has brought into this world. He, and he alone, is the true remedy if we are to be made whole. He is the great physician who can cure all from that soul-ruining trouble that Satan has brought on the world. And he is the king who has announced the coming of his kingdom. Now, there are many lessons that we can learn from this particular miracle. Firstly, Christ is compassionate. Christ is compassionate on those in need. This woman was suffering. Her family was suffering. It was hurting very much. And Christ had compassion on them. And he healed her. We should never underestimate the level of compassion that Christ has for sinful people. For those, and also I suppose for those, well definitely for those whom he has redeemed from sin. His grace, his mercy are great. Can you remember in the Gospels, they describe Jesus, when he saw the crowds, he said, it is said that he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. They were going astray. They didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know where to go. And Christ had compassion on them. He took pity on them. And again, when just before he fed so many thousands, he said, I have compassion for this people because they have remained with me now for 3 days. And they have nothing to eat. I will do something for them. They need food. And I will provide it. Our Lord Jesus Christ is exceedingly compassionate. He does take pity on those who are in need. Secondly, we must note that Christ can heal. He has the power to take away from people all and any kind of sickness and all the symptoms of such sickness. Now the Bible tells us that all illness has come upon us as a result of the fall. Before that, there were no illnesses, there were no diseases, there were no fevers. All of them follow on from the rebellion of Adam and Eve against God and their refusal to be obedient to his command. We all, most of us will fall sick. It is because of sin being brought into this world through Adam. It is one of the marks of a fallen world. It is one of the delights of Satan to bring misery upon people, to make them sick, to bring illness to them. But Christ came to undo all the works of Satan, all the results of the fall. Christ has the power to do that. And he did then, and he can still do it today. Broken relationships, he can heal those. Wrong thoughts, wrong thinkings, wrong attitudes, he can heal those. All sorts of desires that are not God-honoring, he can remove those. He can make people whole, not just in their body, but in their mind and in their hearts as well, and in their souls. And we must ask ourselves, who is the one who by his teaching and by his actions that day, casting out the unclean spirit in the synagogue, by removing the ravages of a fever from a gravely ill woman, and later on by healing so many more that evening, it produced amazement amongst all who heard or saw what went on. Who has the power to do these things? Who is this man? Who is this man who was walking those paths from the synagogue to that home? Who is the one who that evening was able to heal and to cast out demons. Is he a mere man? Is he a mere human being? Mark starts out by saying, this is the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. That healing of that woman, does it back up that statement or does it contradict it? What do you think? And thirdly, we must remember that though Christ performed miracles that were real healing that day, they truly happened, and through them Christ demonstrated his mercy, his grace, his compassion, and the fact that he was the Son of God. They are also pictures of a deeper reality. Sickness is a picture of that greater problem that we have, a problem that grips each one of us from our birth, a problem that will bring us low, lower than a sick bed or even a deathbed. Sickness, one result of the fall of man and the reign of sin in our lives. Sin is a picture of that sin itself. That woman's fever made her totally incapable of doing anything. There was nothing she could do for the Saviour. There was nothing she could do for Jesus Christ. She was deprived of the ability to do anything because that fever had hold of her. She would have wanted to be up and doing. She would have wanted to be tidying up the house, removing bits of dust, sweeping it clean, making sure the meal was right, making sure there was enough food. She wanted to be doing all sorts of things. But there was nothing she could do that would be in any way pleasing for the Lord Jesus Christ. She would have delighted to be able to serve him and his disciples. But that sickness prevented her. Her thoughts were not straight. Her strength was not there. Her body was so much in the grip of the hold of that fever. And spiritually, you are no different if you have not received, if you have not experienced the touch of Jesus Christ. You may not be suffering from the flu or any other physical illness, but you are sick in your heart. You are sick in your thoughts. You are sick in your soul. Sin has a hold of you and it shakes you. You cannot shake it off. You cannot do whatever you try. You will not be able to remove that effect of sin in your life. And that is the spiritual truth that we see behind this wonderful miracle. The woman was unable to serve Jesus Christ with a meal. It had control of her, that fever. And in the same way, you are unable to serve God. You are unable to be obedient to him. You are unable to do anything that would please him because of your sinful nature. Were it not for that fever, Simon's wife's mother would have been active in serving the meal, etc. And were it not for sin that came into this world with the fall of Adam, we would all delight to serve God. We would all delight to fly at his command, to do his bidding with joyful hearts, and we would have the ability to do so. But sin has got hold of us. Sin has made that impossible. Sinful hearts delight in disobeying God. Sinful hearts delight in refusing to do his will. Sinful hearts object to every one of his commands. But that wasn't what we were made for. That isn't what it should be like. But now, every part of us would be ruled by sin. with such a firm hold that we could not release ourselves. A firm hold on the mind that stops you thinking straight. A strong hold upon the heart that makes all your desires biased towards evil and not towards good. A hold on your life so firm, so unbreakable, that it's dragging you down to eternal death. But it doesn't have to end like that. The sickness of sin is not necessarily fatal. It is only fatal if it's left untreated. There is one who can cure that sickness of sin. The people of Capernaum and the area around heard about these events. Isn't it amazing how quickly news spread so far and so fast? The teaching in the synagogue that morning, it would have been a certain topic of conversation at all the meal tables, in all the homes of all the congregation in that synagogue. But there was the miracle of the casting out of the unclean spirit. That would have focused so much more attention on the person of Jesus Christ. Everyone would have been buzzing as they thought it through. And started to sit down and eat and talk about what they'd seen, what they had heard. The excitement caused that day, that morning in the synagogue, would have ensured that every bit of attention was focused on Jesus Christ, the man who had come from Nazareth. And then, later on, the news about Peter's mother-in-law, that begins to spread around the town. This Jesus has cured her from a fever that had laid her low. And even that morning she was so flat out she could do nothing. She was prevented from doing anything. But now she's perfectly well. She's up, she's active, she's doing, she's busy. And she looks perfectly well. What a lot they had to talk about that day. So many questions they could be asking themselves. Who is this one? Who is this one that teaches with such authority? Who is this one who has the authority, the power to tell demons to leave people? Who is the one who can bring full health and strength, complete healing and restoration to the sick in a moment? Who is this man? What do you think? What is your view? What are your thoughts about this man who performed these things on that day? And as the news goes round, as more and more people get to know about the healing of Simon's mother-in-law, the sick people, the ill people, the relatives of those who are unwell, now have hope. They've heard the news of these three astounding events, and they can now begin to believe that their case is not hopeless. There is one who can do something for them. Truly, a man who can work miracles. He's in their area. He's in their town. He's in Simon's home. There is one who can cure illness and its debilitating effects. A sickness that has thwarted every attempt by doctors to overcome it has been banished immediately by this man. And I can imagine the people in Capernaum who were unwell or their relatives saying, well, I would imagine for them, look, there's a sickness here. A man who is laid low. I've got a sickness like hers. I shall go to Jesus. I shall go to this man and I shall ask him to heal me as he did Peter's wife's mother. I shall ask him if he can't heal me. I'm no worse off. Yes, I'll be sadder. I'll be disappointed. But if he heals me, if he takes away my sickness, how wonderful it will be. The healthy brought their sick relatives. All those who could not take themselves were there, gathering to Simon's home, waiting outside the door for Jesus to come out to them. There was nobody. Nobody was beyond hope. There was nobody who was too sick to be healed by Jesus Christ that day. He was there. And they went to him. And they were healed. And Christ is here this morning. He is no different now compared to then. He is still as compassionate today as he was on that day. His touch has still its ancient power. No word from him can fruitless fall. He cured all who came to him that evening. None went away unhealed. None left his presence sick and sorrowing. They all went home rejoicing at what Jesus Christ had done for them or their relatives. And you are no different from them. If anything, your need is greater. You are not sick in your body. Sin is your sickness, and you can't deal with that, and no doctor on earth can. But Christ can. Will you not seek him as they sought him that evening, that day? Will you not ask him as Simon did for his relative? Will you not turn from your sick bed of sin, and seek health and healing at the hand of Jesus? Imagine what it was like for that woman. Try to put yourself in her position. She's there lying on the bed, burning with this fever. It's laid her as low as she could be. Her body is burning. And then Christ comes. And his cool hand touches her feverish hand. She hears him, perhaps indistinctly, but she hears him command the fever to leave. And immediately, she experiences his health, his life, his vitality flowing into her. His power comes to her. It floods into her. And from being in a state of near death, she is full of life once more. The change that came over her was immense. From such a deep sickness to total health in a moment. And what Christ was able to do for the body of that woman, he is able to do for the soul of any and everyone here. His health, his vitality, his grace, his life flowing into you, into your dead and dying soul, he can do that. He can transform you from one who is gripped by sin, led by sin, directed by sin, enthralled by sin, captive to sin. He can transform you from one like that into one who is free from sin and its eternal consequences. If he can do that, if he can do that, and he has done it for many here, why will you remain sin sick? Can you imagine a sick person in Capernaum that evening saying, I don't want to be well. I want to stay sick. I'm happy lying on my bed, burning with a fever. It's great being here. Anyone who heard a person say that would say, he's delirious. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And it's true. He would be. Because the fever had hold of him. And would someone say this morning, I'd rather have sin gripping me. I'd rather have sin controlling me instead of Christ providing the healing that he can and he will provide and that I need? Will you let sin grip you? Will you let yourself be ruled by one that desires your destruction and not your benefit? If Christ can give you life, why will you go down to the grave resisting him and his offer? You would rather not be given life and health and vitality by Christ? You would be a fool, would you not, to refuse such an offer? Why will you not then turn to Christ and ask for his healing touch? Why will you not turn to Jesus and ask him to restore you, to give you the life that you need? Jesus spoke with authority. He astonished a congregation. He cast out an unclean spirit and amazed people by his power. He healed a very sick woman, so there was no trace of her fever. And he speaks with the same authority today. He says, I offer you healing of your soul. I have the power, says Christ, to heal you. And I am compassionate. And if you ask, I will do it. If you seek me, then you will feel my hand. You will feel my power. You will feel that touch on your heart. And you will have life. Christ alone can cleanse your soul of the sickness of sin. There is no one but Christ who can do poor, helpless sinners such as ourselves any good. Will you refuse that offer this day? Go to him now. Ask him to do you that most wonderful of all good. Ask him to cleanse your heart from sin. Have you felt that touch of Jesus? Have you felt that touch bringing life to your heart? Have you been healed of that burning fever of sin in your soul? Or do you still want to stay sick? Do you still want to lie there, raging with fever, and ending up raging in a lost eternity? Why be a fool? Why not seek the Lord Jesus Christ and be healed today, in a moment?